A few days ago, Iraq's prime minister declared that the Iraqi military had fully liberated all of his nation's territory from ISIS forces and had retaken total control of the Iraq-Syria border. Counterterrorism agencies across the world still consider ISIS a significant threat, but how will the loss of territory affect the group's international strength? With me to talk about ISIS and Iraq and the organization's future is Linda Robinson, senior international policy researcher at the RAND Corporation. Linda, how important is Iraq's declared victory over ISIS?
The declaration of success in this campaign against ISIS by the Iraqi prime minister, I think, is an important and legitimate milestone. It represents the dislodging of the Islamic State as a land-holding quasi-state, or caliphate, as they claimed. And that's very important because this very large, powerful, numerous, and pretty brutal and proficient, frankly, terrorist organization accomplished something very few terrorist groups managed to, which is take over a vast swath of territory and population and maintain control of it for 4 years. So I think it's very important that they were able to dislodge this group, and it represents, I think, the key debunking of their claim to have established a caliphate. So I think that it's vital, and it really gives a boost to the Iraqi government and all the people that fought on behalf of this, that they could manage to do this. As some may recall, in 2014, when this group swept across Iraq and then Syria, the Iraqi army really disintegrated, and the Syrian regime was not able to confront it either. So it was really a dramatic event. And now what they've managed to do, and very slowly, frankly, for the first couple years, they've managed to beat it back and really bring people back from underneath the really a horrifically brutal rule.
What made the difference in terms of the past couple of years, and how much involvement did the U.S. have in turning the tide?
It's really a pretty unique example of how the U.S. has, along with 70 other coalition partners, managed to support another government, in this case Iraq, and also a lot of irregular groups, particularly in Syria with the Syrian Kurds. They've managed to support other entities rather than doing the fighting themselves. So it's a model of a type of military campaign that avoids the U.S. having to be front and center in that combat role. So what they provided instead was, first of all the full array of the U.S. and other countries' air platforms to drop bombs, frankly, to strike from the air. They also provided drone and other types of intelligence and surveillance support, and then just as importantly, advisory assistance on the ground. So that combination of efforts, plus supplying a lot of the weaponry and ammunition that was needed, vehicles, and in the closing days to get into some of these heavily barricaded cities, armored bulldozers and things like that, they enabled the campaign without fighting in a combat mode. And I think that's really important for people to understand.
Is there a danger of relaxing to some extent? I don't want to say resting on one's laurels, but almost feeling that way. And what can happen in Iraq to at least make it less likely that the country will face another situation like it did with ISIS?
So there are, I would say, two categories of things that create the risk that Iraq and Syria can fall back into the grip of this group. One is really the failure to make areas habitable and make it possible for people to go back home and resume their normal lives. And this is often called stabilization and reconstruction. And that the reason, of course, if you don't do this, these people become frustrated, antagonized, and can either open the door to some of these fighters coming back in or themselves take up arms. The second issue is the need to reach some political agreements. And with regard to Iraq, we know pretty clearly what those are. And it basically involves decentralizing so that the Sunni areas have more local governance, more of a federal structure so they have control over their own areas, and then the resources, share of the oil revenues and things, so that there's a basic agreement on the social compact and the governing charter. With Syria, it's a much taller order because there is, at this point, no real blueprint or agreement on what needs to happen for Syria to come back together as a country.
Linda, is there another area of the world where ISIS could develop a stronghold? Are there certain nations that the U.S. and other allies are afraid of?
Yes. The foreign fighters that came from North Africa in particular are of great concern to the counterterrorism community. And we did indeed see, once this conflict started turning against ISIS in Iraq, they started sending some of their leadership over to Libya and established a foothold in a place called Sirte. Now they've been beaten back from there. It could easily resurge because Libya, frankly, is kind of an ungoverned space. They have three competing governments. They haven't managed to work out what the post-Qaddafi governing compact is going to be there. There's also a number of affiliates, or they call them wilayats or provinces of the Islamic State around the world, but I think the big concern is whether Africa, as far as an outpost that could generate the potential to attack in, say, Europe or the U.S.
Linda Robinson is a senior policy researcher at the RAND Corporation.